everyone. Welcome back to Joyous Journeys Over 60. I'm Jane Ray, here with my podcast partner, Andrea Stein.
Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. Jane, it's great to be with you again. I really enjoy these times together.
Yeah, we have some really interesting conversations.
We do.
And today we have a guest. So our guest is Therese.
Hello.
And Therese is going to talk to us about a very, very important topic that's often just overlooked, particularly for people over 60, and that's the topic of grief. So again, as we reach a certain age, unfortunately, the possibility of losing those that are close to us becomes more of a reality. Therese, you used the term before, almost a little predictable.
Correct, yes. When we get to be over 60, then, which of course I am, you don't ponder it constantly, but you know that every time someone gets sick, it makes you think of it. Every time somebody has a fall, every time somebody, it makes you wonder, how is this going to affect them? Briefly, boom. But it's one of those things that you begin to think about when you get to be older.
Yeah. Mortality.
Yeah.
Ours and others, becomes a little closer, maybe than a little further away when we were when we were younger. And it's a difficult topic to talk about because most of us don't want to acknowledge that. Andreas, you were saying grief is a scary.
It's a scary thing because we always like to think about what's the solution, what's a positive outcome to a problem. Well, when it comes to grief, the desired positive outcome, the person being here, is not a possibility. So is there a positive outcome? Is there a solution? And that's a tough question, and that makes it so scary because it just seems to be an issue without a solution.
Yeah, absolutely. So Therese, would you mind just sharing for a few minutes your grief journey and what's happened to you recently?
So,
take your time.
Sorry.
Very painful.
No, I still get choked up about it. So I recently lost my sister within the last year or so. We came from a family of six. I had four older brothers, and her and I were the two youngest. So we were very close. We were forged against four boys growing up. Anne-Marie was my sister's name, and she became sick in December of 2022. She thought it was gallbladder, and at that same time, the month before she got sick, I was diagnosed also with large B-cell, lymphoma. And when my sister was then, she went into the hospital, had never been sick like this before, ever. When she went into the hospital, they diagnosed her within 4 weeks or so, 3 weeks of having bile duct cancer in a very advanced stage. And to the point of where it was, we found out that it was a matter of weeks, not months, that was anticipated. Now, keep in mind, it was when Anne-Marie and I were having our chemo on the same day, and I was like, we're going to fight this together, you know? And being the older sister, I went ahead and did all the things that I thought I was supposed to do, right? I sent her holy cards. Catholic upbringing. I sent her, things. I sent her a book that is something that I have read for quite some time and has always filled my soul. And it was Jesus Calling. And I sent her that book and we would read some of those things on a day-to-day basis. And she fought very, very hard. And it's an amazing thing because it took me thinking about what was going on with me completely out of my head. I didn't think about me. I didn't, another chemo, great. That's fine. I didn't think about me. It was all focused on her. And she died within 5 weeks after being diagnosed. I was going through my own at the time, and I could not, I would have maybe 5 days where I could be around other people, if that, because of my immune system was. And I said, I should come out and see you. I'll come out and see you. She goes, no, just wait. Well, I was just going to go out. I got the okay to go see her on a Thursday. She died on a Monday. So my last conversation with her was a Sunday, the 19th of February. And we did a FaceTime. So by then she was very out of it, but not completely. And I showed her some pictures of when we were younger.
That's okay. Take your time.
And we kind of, I remember I showed her a picture. We were on a cruise and she was much younger. She went, wow. And I go, yeah, you were a cupcake, you know, like, by then she was very jaundiced and she had, all natural gray hair. She used to say before she was kind of out of it, she said that she looked a little bit like, a minion.
Papaya.
Yeah, exactly. And so I told her I loved her. She had people around her. Her husband was there. Her best friend was there from New York. Amory had lived in New York for 20 something years. She never moved back to Michigan, and or 30 years. Anyway, she had been on hospice, and like I said, it was just a matter of you know, days at that point. I told her, hang on, I'm coming. And I said, I'll see you soon. And I love you. I said, you've always had a piece of my heart. She passed away the next morning in hospice at 11 o'clock. I'm sorry. She was taken to hospice the next morning at 11 o'clock on a Monday. She passed away that evening at like 9:05 or 9:11, something like that, was her official, as I like to say, heaven-bound date. I don't like to say dead. So she, take this what you will. I went in to take a shower. I came out in the living room, and my husband and I, we just got the phone call and that she had passed away from my brother-in-law. And I'm sitting there and I was crying, and I just said, I don't understand why. It's so fast and I just don't understand why. Anyway, so I was on the phone with my daughter telling her, and the lights in my bedroom on my nightstand started like brightening and then it would dim, brightening and then it would dim. This went on for, I said to Katie, I said, the nightstand in next to my bed is like doing this weird, like the light gets bright and then it dims. She goes, Mom, maybe it's Amory trying to talk to you. So I went into the bedroom, I hung up the phone, and I started talking. And this went on for 45 minutes. And I, like I said, take this as what you will. The light dimmed. It didn't go out. It didn't burn out. It just stayed like at the soft light. In an hour or so later after I'd called and we'd been talking about it and I'd been crying and we went to bed and I had an apparition of her standing next to my nightstand with a book in her hand. It was like, I want to say the Bible maybe, or the Jesus Calling. She was in a green and white dress. It was the most uncanny thing. And it was, I had to almost question myself, did I dream it? But it wasn't a dream. It wasn't. So how has it been since then? It's been, the grief has been, was constant in the beginning, constant. I'd wake up in the morning, I'd be thinking about her. My brother-in-law did a memorial service in New York for her. I was able to go to that. We did that in March. Her birthday was in March. It was right around her birthday. And that was a month after or so she passed. And that was great because, you know, my daughter was there, my son went, you know, family, all of friends and all of that. And that was really wonderful. But we still wanted to do something up at the lake. We had a family cottage for years, years. I'm talking since I was two and she was not even born yet. So, and she loved, we used to do pirate weekend up there. And she wanted to have a pirate wake by the lake. So in February, I'm sorry, not in February, in July of 2023, we went up there. It was the weekend of the 17th or whatever it was in July, that whole weekend. That Saturday, we buried her ashes in the family plot up there. My mom and dad had bought in the Catholic church up there, a couple of plots. We all had some sort of pirate gear on, patches. My niece who did the officiating, she had the full gala on and she started out the ceremony with, "Army buckos."
I love that.
"We come here for a good, all you scallywags come here for to honor a good pirate of ours, a good buccaneer." And that's how it went on. And, you know, she would say things like, and, you know, blah, 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 whatever, may God, you know, rest her peace. Arr, you know, it's how we would, that's how we would respond. So how cathartic is that? It was very, very. And then, you know, we each threw a load of dirt onto that. And I wrote a note, put it in the grave. Several weeks after that, you're her sister, you go ahead and do the tombs, the headstone. My brother-in-law had no desire to really do it. So I'd been praying about it. What do I do? Come on, Anne Marie, help me, you know? And when she was going through her cancer, she said to me, she didn't want to know what the prognosis was. And she said to me, she said, "I don't know what's going to happen to either of us." And she said to me, "Well, we'll be each other's guardian angels." And I said, "Hey, you've already been mine because she helped me through a very serious sickness with an operation. And she was there for me." Anyway, so I think of that statement often, that she said that. So I was, to get back to the tombstone or the headstone. She was a costume designer, extremely talented. And... for years, and one of the last places she worked at was the Madame Alexander Doll Company, and she did design some of the dolls and the clothes for them and so forth. Come to find out, there was a whole storage unit that my brother-in-law knew nothing about, that she had a bunch of Madame Alexander dolls saved and tucked away in there. A lot. I mean, a lot. To the tune of probably 60 or 70.
Wow.
You know, all different sizes, all wrapped up. And the reason I say these things is these are the things that happen when someone passes away. And I think it helps you deal with the grief. You can touch it. You can feel it. It's like still having her here. So she loved the Wizard of Oz. We loved the Wizard of Oz growing up and stuff. But she had a ton of dolls from Madame Alexander that were Wizard of Oz, Dorothy, Tin Man, like this size, you know, the 10-inch dolls, the larger 20-inch dolls. One year for Christmas, while she was working there, she had a ginormous box of little ruby slippers that were hanging on a gold string, and she made Christmas ornaments for all of us out of them. So I was thinking, I was like, coming in, all of a sudden, one morning, it just popped into my head. She loved the cottage. The cottage was like her sanctuary, her second home, you know, when we all went up there growing up. It holds a ton of memories. And she wanted to be buried up there, definitely. And it dawned on me, I knew it had to go on the headstone. So it just got finished a week ago or so. And it is ruby slippers, a plaque of ruby slippers, and then an angel that she had embroidered on it's a picture of the angel she embroidered. And then her information, you know, the date she was born and of course the date she was heaven bound. And then underneath it, I put in parentheses, there's no place like
home. Oh, that is beautiful.
Yeah. So it's twofold, right? You know, she was heading home and then she was where she loved to be. So
you've honored her so many ways from, I love the pirate memorial. I think that
she would have loved it. I'm sure she did.
And isn't that the point, right? She would have loved it. And the whole family kind of gathered around that idea because she would have loved it. And so do you think that as part of grief, is there some kind of solace? And I know there isn't a lot of solace. I mean, obviously this is very fresh, but in also doing things like the headstone, like really putting thought into what goes into what is going to be a permanent memorial. Is there any kind of solace in being able to plan these things, to think about these things, to kind of feel these things?
Without a doubt. I sold $1,100 of those Madame Alexanders online to help pay for this. Not that we wouldn't have, but what's that? Let somebody else have these dolls to collect or whatever. We also had sold some of them before the actual pirate weekend to help pay for the memorial in New York too. My daughter handled that because I was still going through the cancer stuff, which so getting in there and having to go through them and to look at them and to, it was hard, so hard, because it felt like she was right there. And it was hard. It was a tough thing. It was like in my face, even if I didn't want it in my face. So, and you know, it takes you back. So many memories happen. And do I think it's solace? Without a doubt. Cathartic? Absolutely. It still is that, you know, a card you find from someone that you've lost, a Christmas present that you wear, a letter, and a song. I lost it. I got really this morning on my way in, and I had to call my daughter and say, I got a hit again. Boom. And she said, you got a hit again. You made an accident, Mom. That's what she said. I said, no. I heard a song on the radio and it reminded me so much of your Auntie Riri. I said, and it just brought back this memory of when she was going to do freelancing as a costume designer. And she was really nervous and scared if she was going to make it or not. And she called me up and we had long conversations about it and it tore me up a bit. You know, so yes, all of those things add up to types of grief, how you handle it, how does it worm its way into your heart that it makes you feel it's this is going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You don't ever lose that.
Wondering, Therese, when you look back on this journey, since your sister died, and you're obviously a person, you have a lot of friends, people who care for you, people who love you, family members. If you look back, what were kind of the things that people said or did that really helped you kind of to deal with the hurts, the pain, the missing, and everything that comes with it?
That's an awesome question. At the memorial in New York, there were things about my sister I did not know. You know, she had lived there for so many years and had created this. So there was a young girl that stood up and wanted to speak about my sister and said that she was the only person at her place of work that honored Anne Marie and her difficult changes as she transitioned personally, you know, for coming out, right? And not that that surprised me at all, because that's who she was. But it just was, and I thought, she was so wonderful. Or, you know, that type of validation, not that I needed it, but to hear that from other individuals, or the things that somebody said to me. One gal of hers, a good friend, "I've never met anybody like your sister, and I'll never forget her."
That's the legacy, right?
Yeah. I mean,
if that's the legacy that we all leave, you know, something that touched other people, I think there's no greater legacy that we could have.
No. And just, are those the things that made me and others that were there that also were feeling a loss too, that comforted them, even if it came with a, "I'm so sorry," you know, "Oh, I'm so sorry." But then they stand up and tell us a story about my sister, and I'll be like, "Yep, that's who she was." So maybe they didn't say it when they said, "I'm so sorry," but because that's a canned phrase.
Let me ask you, this turns this question around, Therese. If you look back on this year plus since your sister died, you know, sometimes people say things probably with the best of intentions, but things that kind of make you feel a little, "Yeah, I'm not sure if this is really helpful." Do you remember things maybe that people said to you that, looking back, "Yeah, that wasn't particularly helpful"? Maybe helping others to know, all right, maybe be careful with saying something along those lines.
I have to think about that. I have to give that some consideration as to, did anybody make me go like, what?
Some people get tired of the words "I'm sorry." I've seen it where it's like, "Well, what are you sorry for?" "Well, I'm sorry for your loss," right? "I'm sorry for your loss." But, and sometimes people don't know what to say.
Yeah. And I'm not to interrupt you.
No,
but,
go ahead.
But I know when somebody says to me, like, and this did happen, and I understand why they said it, but I know when they say, "I know what it's like." I know what it's like when that happens. I know I lost. I know. And I almost want to say, "No, you don't. You don't know really what it's like for me. You don't. Because I don't know what it's like for people that, you know, when I lost my brother." And, you know, I politely listen to that. And I'll say, "Yes, I understand for sure. I get it." And then I'm like, "No, I don't. You don't understand exactly. She was the most important person. A sister, right? Like, she shared my history. She knew my history. You know, she knew. She's gone. So who else is there that knew me like she did? So do you really know what it's like? You know, do you know what it's like to be in my shoes? I don't know. Do you?" That's what I want to say.
There's something so unique and so individual when it comes to grief. You had a relationship to your sister like no one else. I mean, had, you know, so the things that you feel, the things that you are going through, the way you are dealing with it, no one else does. Even though grief, everyone deals with it, but there is something so unique to every person's grief that just say, "Oh, I know what it is like." Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think you...
Right? My sister and I are fighting cancer together. We're going to beat this together, and she's the one that loses?
Yeah.
No. We don't know what it's like.
You don't know what it's like.
You know, it's really interesting, and thank you. Really thank you, because I think you bring up something that, you know, I talk about how it's underserved or, excuse me, not talked about. Most of the time at this age, when you kind of project grief, you may project the loss of a spouse, which is powerful, painful, hard to get out of bed in the morning. I understand that. But losing a sibling, and you said something really, really kind of prophetic. And that's that, like, I have a sister, and it's only me and my sister. We've known each other our whole lives. right? We've seen each other since we're little kids, all the good, the bad, the ugly. We've shared our, the only person, that we're only one of two, but it's the only person that has ever traveled that whole journey with you. It's a very different loss, but very profound loss. And I don't think we talk about that. I think when we talk about, you know, the potential of losing somebody at this age, we're most of the time thinking about a partner. And again, that's awful and terrifying. I mean, I love my husband, but sharing your story about losing your sister, a sibling, that's scary.
Yeah.
It is. And I thank you, because I don't think that's given enough airtime, you know, to talk about what it's like losing a parent. You know, right. At this age, I think most of us have gone through losing a parent, different relationship. And you're right. I don't know what it's like for you, because I don't know your relationship with your sister. You know, we don't know, right? But grief is different for everyone. And I think that when the person says to you, well, I know what you're going through, they're not being callous. I think in some ways they're reliving.
And they're trying to understand, I think, create a bond with you that, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
And you probably do get it on some levels. You get it, you know, but not really.
Let me ask you. One more question, out of curiosity, Therese. Now, it's been a little bit over a year or something like this since your sister died. How is your grief the same today as it was the week after? How has your grief transformed, changed, if it has?
It has.
How has it changed?
It is not as raw. It's not as raw. It's not as constant. That constant loss, waking up every morning, you know, that, and I'm sure it's, you know, it grief is so personal, and it's different for everybody, And, you know, my question was, you know, how come I lost? How come, you know, we're fighting this together, you know, and that I don't know if you want to call it survivor's guilt, whatever. But I was just like, you know, that hung at me for several weeks after, as well as really knowing I couldn't pick up the phone. And so it was it. But as time went on, and I remember I had somebody who was a friend and had counseled grief, said, when you feel something gut punch you like that, you pull over if you're driving, because I happened to be driving when this happened. It was right around my birthday. And she would always call me up on my birthday, and our nicknames were Chuchi. So she would always call me up and say, hey, happy birthday, Chuchi. And she'd sing to me. She had an awesome voice. Anyway, it was my birthday, and I had to pull over. The person that told me this, to try this, is just pull over and just let it out, whether it's screaming, whether it's crying, whether it's yelling, whatever. Well, me, I'm a crier, so I cried. And give it that 90 seconds or 2 minutes, and know it's okay to do that. That's what she had said to me. My friend had said to me, and that's what I did. And it was amazingly relieving. You have to embrace it and release it, the grief that you have, as best as you can. And is it less now? Yes, much so. It's more of a sweet than a sad. My grief is more sweet now. When I say that sweet, I'm talking about memory, as opposed to gut-wrenching loss. So it does. Prayer helps, you know, a great deal. God, I can't do this today. Fix it. That kind of thing. But it does morph, at least for me, it morphs into something less tearful and at times smiling. And it helps to share, like the story about the pirate wake by the lake.
I love,
you know. And my kids and my family have been great, you know, to help share with that, to help with that grief. But it is, like I said, it's much more sweet sweeter, I should say, now than, you know, when I think about going back home to Michigan and seeing the headstone and stuff, that makes me smile. And that's part of the sweet memory or sweet grief, I guess.
It's an interesting term. I like that term,
I'm
right?
I'm chiming on this too. That's sweet grief. I mean, I've never heard these two words put together in the same phrase.
I don't know how else to explain it.
I think we're gonna hold on to that term, because it describes a lot in two short words.
Yes.
I think it's very powerful.
So there is hope for the after of grief.
I hope so, because I've had loss in my life, both my parents, two of my brothers, you know, but you know, Anne-Marie and I were like this.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Again, there are just no words to describe how grateful Andreas and I and our listeners are for your being so open and so real in talking about this. It's not easy to talk about. I know. I could see it in your face that it's...
I'm sure all of the listeners can hear it in my voice, too, as I'm trying not to cry.
Well, and again, but tears are part of grief, right? And so thank you for being so genuine, because I think that's what people need to hear. I mean, that's kind of the origins of our podcast, is to have real conversations about real things that happen over 60. You know, we call the podcast Joyous Journeys Over 60, and we want our life over 60 to be joyous. But there are realities, and this is a reality.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, being able to hear about it, I love that term, sweet grief.
Yeah, I agree.
As an evolution, right? It doesn't start off being sweet, but as an evolution that, you know, people can hang on to, that maybe at some point in my grief, it will become sweet grief instead of gut-wrenching. So I think that's really, really powerful. Andreas, any last thoughts?
I've just been so impressed, Therese, with your courage to share so openly. And I mean, you certainly set an example, you know, that you live an example, you know, that as painful and as gut-wrenching as grief is and how scary it is, you know, there still is hope. Not the hope that, you know, that we would wish that person coming back, but there is hope that there will be a sweet side, that there will be even a joyful side after, you know, and it takes time. It's not something, there's no shortcut to get to that sweetness.
That's true.
You know, but one, if you keep traveling the journey and keep moving forward, you'll get there. And you're demonstrating that in just a very powerful way, Therese. I'm just very grateful for your willingness to share so openly.
Well, thank you. And thank you for this also has helped to talk about this with the both of you. It's all little tiny baby steps, certainly. And thank you for allowing me to be a part of this podcast and for letting me share this journey with you.
Well, and you know, as kind of a last thought, and I think this is, and you just said it, if you're going through this, if you're going through a grieving process, talk about it. Find people to that you feel comfortable sharing with, because, you know, as you just said, it helps to be able to talk or share memories or being it, you're not necessarily going to go on a podcast, but being able to open your heart, there is a certain comfort, I guess, in being able to feel safe and comfortable talking about that. Anyhow, again, thank you so much to both of you. Important topic, difficult topic, but an important topic. We will continue talking about important topics in future episodes of Joyous Journeys Over 60. I'm Jane Grohl Ray. We're here with Therese, Andreas, as always. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time, Jane. It's great.
All right. See you all soon.